down there.
No, that's what they said.
I'd welcome everybody to our meeting today, tax meeting day. Today is February 25th, 2019. We're trying to hurry this along because I know that, you guys are busy just like we are. First of all, I want to, go around the room, self-introduction. I know this is the face that you and I have seen before. And if we can start from my left, Mike Payne.
Mike Payne, Lawrence County Transit.
Scott Thompson, ODOT District.
Bill Dingus, Lawrence County Port Authority.
John Callahan with AECOM.
I am Steve Cole with LJV.
Jennifer Woodall with PTA.
Patrick Lyon, Lawrence County Engineer.
Joe Callahan, Secretary of Transportation Cabinet, District Nine Planning.
Matt Dillon, Kentucky Transportation Cabinet, District Nine Planning. Ali Sadega, Carpenter Marty Transportation.
John Gallagher, Carpenter Marty Transportation.
Chase Straight, Planner with City of Huntington.
Judy Sigmund, Iota.
Kevin Sullivan, West Virginia, DOT Planning.
Chris Kinsey, DOT Planning.
Kara Greathouse, I'm with the Charleston, West Virginia MPO.
Chandra Engel Smith, Federal Highways, West Virginia.
Thomas Witt, KYTC Central Office.
Luke Stapleton, 5 Core Area Development District.
Kelly Ward, 5 Core Area Development District.
Terry Seeking, Kioga.
Dominic Kioga. Doug Paul Davis, I'm with PTA. Okay, well, the first item on our agenda, is the introduction of the minutes from the September 18th, 2018 meeting, and, they were distributed, there is no action required. Okay, we don't have to have a call. Well, there any comments with the, minutes as they were distributed? Okay, that's right along. First thing on the agenda is, Kioga Transportation Study and Project Update. And we're gonna move the, order just a little bit because, I don't know the reason, but we are. We're gonna move Phoebe, from Ed Tucker Group, to talk about the Marshall University Bike Plan. Phoebe, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Are we up and ready to go?
Yes, we are, and you're up and ready to go.
Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you so much. So to give, a brief summary of what we have done to date, for the project, we convened the, steering committee, in December, and that included, representatives from Marshall University, Kioga, of course, our firm. We had, representatives from the City of Huntington. We had, Terry Keller from the, Department of Highways as well. So, we're also hoping to have representation from District 2, at the, as a part of the project as well, on the steering committee. We identified, essentially 5 locations that are satellite locations, that are the focus of the study. So Highline along 3rd Avenue, the ceramics and sculpture warehouse, the soccer practice facility, and then Highline along 5th Avenue, the Kroger, the physical therapy campus, at the St. Mary's Education Center, and then also the future baseball stadium development. Connections to those are going to be part of the scope of the study. And then we also identified the Fairfield Medical Campus along Hal Greer Boulevard, including the Fairfield Stadium site and Cabell Huntington Hospital. And then the downtown locations, the Visual Arts Center, our CBI.
You seem to have lost. Operating, okay. The phone's. Is anyone there? Is anyone on the line?
Yes, other people are still on the phone.
Okay, we've lost.
Chair Bill. Give Phoebe a couple minutes to see if she comes back on.
Hello.
Are you back?
I'm so sorry about that. Someone was trying to call in, and I think my phone just switched to emergency mode for some reason. I'm so sorry about that. Okay, so can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So we also discussed the work that StanTech is currently doing for the state DOT along Halgrove Boulevard. Our plan is to try to just simply incorporate their recommendations into the bicycle plan that we're working on, and then look at any secondary connections that need to be made between Hal Greer and any specific campus locations on side streets. But you know, we have already had some dialogue with StanTech as they're developing their plan, and we are interested to see their kind of first round of deliverables once those are produced and ready for review. We have received information on the bike share program that's currently being utilized on campus, and we have some great kind of first year feedback on that to incorporate. And so essentially our next steps are going to be to issue a survey, a digital survey that's going to go out to stakeholders. And then we're also working on organizing meetings at all of the specific satellite campus location sites to get feedback from people who are using bike transportation to go to and from those locations, to understand what the specific concerns are with each site. There was a lot of discussion about 3rd and 5th Avenues and kind of the how best to incorporate bike ped facilities on those streets and address safety. So we've had some good dialogue about that. And I think that brings everything up to date. We're waiting on a little bit of information back from some of the steering committee members as far as studies and reports that are underway that we'd like to reference and review. But essentially, I think that should bring us up to date with where we are.
Okay. Any questions for Phoebe? Phoebe, well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you all. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Lawrence County, US 52 Interchange, Speed Development Authority.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Sorry I couldn't be there in person. Hopefully my slideshow is up and ready. I will keep it brief. I'm Steve Bergman with the Mannequin Smith Group. We've got a number of projects going on presently. I'll just give you a brief update on where we are. As a reminder, the Lawrence County 52 Interchange feasibility study is underway. We are nearing an end here. As a reminder, our study area is looking at safety, congestion, and access improvements to US 52 from Dallas Matthew Pike to the US 52 River crossing. Next slide, please. Our objectives are to develop short, medium, and long-term improvements. And then we need to phase these projects to address, like I said, safety, congestion, accessibility, and accessibility primarily focused on opening up economic development opportunities and land tracts for that. Next slide, kind of the status. We've submitted as part of our short-term improvement, we've looked at improving the Walmart Way intersection with US 52, and we've come up with a green T type of configuration, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. That was approved for safety funds by ODOT Central Office. I'd like to thank District 9 for their support, and of course, Kyova and Salim for working with us on that. We are presently looking at a Charlie Creek safety study. That's more of a short or medium term solution to improve the overall configuration of that interchange as a first step to address safety concerns. We've got meetings with ODOT. We've had meetings with ODOT District 9 and Central Office to review alternatives for long-term solutions out there, which would include a potential interchange. We're down to four primary alternatives. Those are medium and long term. We're developing measures for the stakeholders to take a look at and get an idea how each of those alternatives impacts certain criteria out there. And then we'll be refining the geometrics based on what we come up with in terms of a preferred alternative or alternatives. Next slide, please. Our next steps are completion of the Charlie Creek safety study this month. The submission date to ODOT Central Office is April 30th, so we want to give plenty of time for us to meet with locals on some options. We're already talking with ODOT District 9. They're aware of this submission. We've got to finish our safety study and give District 9 plenty of opportunity to review to make sure that we are submitting a proper package that could receive funding from some central office. Next slide, I want to talk a little bit about the Walmart Way Green Tea. That's an immediate safety improvement. As you may know, that intersection with US 52 has a high number of crashes. So, and it also, with the amount of traffic, causes excessive delay and congestion on 52. So let's take a look at that configuration. If you could pull up the next slide for me. They're calling it a green tea. I apologize if it's hard to see the slide. But in essence, what we're trying to do is separate the turning movements from the through movements on westbound US 52. And there's certain advantages to this. We are not changing any access. So I want to make that clear. So there's going to be full access. The advantage of this is there's going to be a separation between the westbound left turn lanes coming out of Walmart Way. That will provide uninterrupted westbound 52 movement. There will be no signal for that movement, so that's going to improve the congestion. And by separating the left turners from that through traffic, you're also eliminating another conflict point there, so that's going to improve crashes at that location. In addition, it's going to be a more efficient signal operation. So it's going to be, there's going to be less phasing and less cycle length, which in turn will improve delay and improve congestion. So this was approved. Next slide. It was submitted and approved in last fall. Again, thank you, District 9, for their support. We got approved safety funding from Central Office, and they approved our overall concept. About $683,000 was approved for that. Construction is scheduled for August 2020. So that's a success in the short term for sure. Next slide, let's talk about Charlie Creek safety study. The status of the study is, like I said, we need to complete that study this month. That gives us plenty of time to work with District 9 on finalizing our final approach and our final alternative for that. We're looking at submission April 30th for that safety study review, and we will probably know, I believe, in May or June whether we get approved for safety funding for that. Next slide, work to do with this alternatives. We need to meet with the locals and the businesses. Dr. Dengus recommended that at our last TAC meeting, and we are going to proceed. We are talking with District 9 to find out how they want to have that happen, but our intent is to make sure that we are reaching out to local businesses so they are aware of the options we're being considered on that. We need to review with the stakeholders and then refine that alternative with ODOT. So, the Lawrence County US 52 interchange study has turned out to be interesting in the fact that we're identifying some short, medium-term improvements in trying to develop funding or pursue funding for those projects. And so far, we've been fairly successful. Our next step with the overall project is to meet with the stakeholders one more time, come up with a preferred alternative or alternatives, have a public meeting, and then finish our final report, and then, of course, be available to help with financing or funding. So I'll be happy to take any questions.
Steve, it doesn't look like there are any questions. Thank you for your report and your presentation. So we'll move right on to the next presentation. The Sandusky Road Study, Matt.
Okay, great. Good morning, everybody. So this Sandusky Road Study is really another short-term analysis or improvement for the 52 corridor. So I'm presenting the status of the study for Lawrence County. And if you look at the second slide, at the study area, there's currently some safety issues at the intersection there at Township Road 1429 and Sandusky Road. It's very close to the intersection of 52 and Sandusky, where trucks are pulling out of XPO Logistics, as well as all the vehicles coming out of the rehab center and Casa Grande. So the trucks don't have any room to queue up, and they're shooting across Sandusky Road to get to 52 intersection. So it's causing a lot of conflicts between all the vehicles, as well as the parking, because there's undefined parking and pedestrian access along those township roads and driveways there too. So we've developed three alternatives that try to separate truck traffic from the vehicle traffic for both the trucking company, the rehab center, and the restaurants, and able to try to get them to line up safely on Sandusky Road so they can get out to 52. The alternatives that were presented, they were presented to property owners at a public meeting that we held on January 31st. If you look at the third slide, you can see the exhibits and the cost estimates for all three of the alternatives that were developed. The concept A separates the truck traffic and the restaurant traffic with a reconstructed township road. Concept B eliminates that private drive that's close to 52 there from Sandusky Road, and it combines all the truck traffic and the restaurant traffic with the new reconstructed township road. And both of those concepts create a new cul-de-sac. Concept C separates the traffic, the truck traffic, from the restaurant and rehab center by reconstructing Township Road 1428 just south of the restaurant. And the average cost of all these improvements is $280,000. So following the public meeting, the favored alternative that came out of that is Concept B, that eliminates that private drive from north on Sandusky Road near 52. Our team is currently making some adjustments to that concept, such as instead of a cul-de-sac, we're looking at a T-type intersection near the rehab center and the trucking company, as well as adding some concepts for a boulevard type of concept and updating the cost estimate. So next, the county engineer office will be looking at obtaining some survey information so we can define the property lines and do a little more engineering. And then the county is looking at submitting an application for construction funding for the ODOT TID grant program in May. So with that, I'll open it up for any questions.
Okay. Doesn't look like there are any questions. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Sorry you couldn't be here today. Always look forward to seeing you back. I understand about travel and all that. So,
Thank you.
We appreciate your presentation. Thank you. High River Bridge Crossing Study, Manish, please. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go next to the safety study for Kevin and Wayne Counties, Burgess Nyquil.
Good morning. This is Steve Teakin from Burgess and Nyquil.
I'm sorry, you guys. I had you guys on mute. If you don't mind, I can go ahead and give my 3 minutes. I had it unmuted. I'm unmuted now.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll go back to Manoj then.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yes, I had it to avoid noise. I had it on mute. Sorry. This is Manoj with CDM Smith. I'll take you a couple of minutes to give you an overview of the Ohio River.
Go ahead.
Yep. This is a 2-year study that we just executed the contract with Kiowa. Slide number 2 shows the project vicinity study area. The potential new corridor would be connecting West Virginia to in Cabell County to Ohio 7 and Lawrence County. The study purpose is to evaluate the needs and location for a crossing between Ohio State Route 7 and West Virginia 193, also to accommodate traffic circulation and enhance safety, to promote regional economic development, and also support the Huntington Outer Belt linking Southern Ohio and Western West Virginia and Kentucky segments of I-64. The next slide, we have identified 3 locations for potential corridors, as you can see on the slide, identified as alternate 1, alternate 2, and alternate 3, which the study will have detailed information on each alternate. The next slide is kind of a balance that we have to identify the challenges that be associated with this feasibility study. Will be the funding, the potential impacts, stakeholder consensus, and the opportunities obviously will be the regional access, providing safety, operation, and economic development. So the study is just getting underway. We're in the process of existing data collection, but I wanted to show you a slide on public participation that we plan on having a pretty comprehensive public involvement outreach. That basically, the study goal will be that project would be a functional, a financially feasible study, and also favored by the stakeholders. As far as the status, as I said, we just underway, and we will be submitting to Kiowa a pretty comprehensive project schedule, which will be a 2-year study. So I will turn it over to any questions you might have.
Also, we're going to really have 3 presentations for the bridge study and the safety study at the West Virginia Planning Conference at the end of February. Okay. That will be the presentation. All right. Okay, it doesn't look like there are any additional questions. Thank you very much for your presentation, Manoj.
You're welcome.
Manoj, you really need to do some comprehensive study on the number of closures of 64. Where this would have provided a good outer belt, because I think that's something that we often forget about. But I've sat in that traffic 2 or 3 hours, so that is something that I think needs to be an important part of the study.
Sure, that absolutely. We're planning on having a comprehensive planning, a traffic look at all these 64 components and the project, sure.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll move on to the next item, and we're back to Burgess and Nigel. I think you said your name was Steve.
Good morning again. Steve Teakin here. We're just getting started on this study as well. Signed our contract at the end of February or end of January, so we're in the process of getting data together and getting things organized. But ultimately, the study, I thought I'd just give a overview of the scope. The ultimate goal of the study is to identify, high crash, high risk areas in Cabell and Wayne counties, focusing mainly on the urbanized areas, but also considering spot locations throughout the counties. To develop a good, solid high crash list, location list for those counties. identify what the crash trends are, what the major issues are, and ultimately end up with a set of recommendations for a number of the locations that are the highest risk and highest crash occurrence, and with a lot of emphasis on the severity of crashes too. So come up with actual improvements and projects that you guys can move forward with in your planning and design. So that's the ultimate goal of the project. Our process will involve using the crash data from DOH's database. We're going to boil that down, create a couple different levels of screening analysis where we go from all locations down to a manageable number. Then we will dive deeper into analysis on, say, 30 locations and really dig in more on those locations. Our involvement, our stakeholder involvement process will include 3 formal meetings. The first meeting, not really until right now we're targeting June for the first meeting. So we're going to have a lot of work from between now and then, just going through data. And then from then on, we're going to space this out about 2 or 3 months between the meetings to kind of keep it going, with the hope of wrapping up the stakeholder involvement by the end of the year. Public engagement, we're going to put out an initial survey. This will be an online interactive survey that the public can go on and basically place a pin locating any concern or location of concern that they have, and then they can put in comments about what the issue is or what their concern is. So we're hoping to combine that input with the technical analysis to come up with these, you know, highly crashed locations. And then towards the end of the process, we would have a public open house meeting and invite the public to come see the findings and the recommendations. So that's generally the process, and the entire process is scheduled to be wrapped up in the spring of 2020. So, any questions?
Any questions for Steve? Comment? Okay, Steve, sounds like you're off the hook.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you. Okay, District West Bridge Study. Hey, Tom.
Hi, this is Dennis Simpson. I'm AECOM's project manager for this study. This presentation will go over the 5th Street West Bridge study in the city of Huntington, West Virginia. The bridge was built in 1921 and carries 5th Street West over Four Pole Creek in the city of Huntington. The bridge is owned and maintained by the city of Huntington. If I go to slide 2, I'll walk through the scope elements. Scope of the study includes the following elements: review existing information, review 2013 and 2017 bridge inspection reports, develop a couple of alternatives for the rehab and replacement of the bridge, evaluate environmental and historic permits and approvals required to construct the bridge, develop an alternative matrix, which will compare required approvals and costs and so forth, hold public and stakeholder meetings in April, and develop a final design study report. If you go on to slide 3, schedule calls for the study to be completed in June 2019. We're currently reviewing existing information. Next month, we'll be evaluating the environmental historic permitting requirements for the 2 alternatives that we're going to develop. And then in April, we'll develop an alternative matrix comparing roadway geometrics, bridge condition, maintenance of traffic requirements, utility impacts, right-of-way impacts, costs, required environmental historic permits, as well as needed coordination with Corps of Engineers and Fish and Wildlife Service. AECOM will then hold a public and stakeholder meeting in April, is currently the plan, to understand the concerns of the general public, the city of Huntington, and the neighborhood associations in the area. In May, we'll develop the draft design study report, which will include a recommended preferred alternative based on the analysis performed and the public and stakeholder input, as well as next steps to design and construct the preferred alternative. Slide 4. AECOM has developed a first cut of a list of stakeholders we should engage with on this study. They include City of Huntington, Department of Public Works, Police and Fire, and the Greater Huntington Park and Rec District, as well as some neighborhood associations surrounding the bridge, Southside Neighborhood Association, Westside Huntington Organization, and Downtown Neighborhood Association. And we're open to others that may be identified by the city if they care to share. That would be great. On to slide five, the alternatives that would be evaluated by AECOM include building a new bridge on the existing alignment, as well as renovating the existing bridge, and then a no-build alternative just for comparison purposes. Going on to slide six, next steps for us are, again, to develop those alternatives, evaluate the required approvals, develop the matrix, hold the stakeholder and public meetings, and then develop that final report. And slide seven, we'll be back for your April set of meetings to give you an update on this study, which will be much further along. We'll have had the public stakeholder involvement and have developed the alternatives and our initial review of environmental historic permitting requirements. So we'll have a lot more to talk about in April. With that, I'll open it up for questions.
Seeing or hearing no questions, Dennis, thank you very much for your presentation. And we'll go on to the next presentation. Yeah, our Arlington Park Mobility Study, GAI.
Yes, good morning. This is Patty Fulham with GAI. So we recently kicked off this study at the end of January, so we're kind of in the early stages of looking at mobility in the Arlington Park neighborhood. The first slide that we have shows you the study area that we developed in conjunction with Kiowa. We included the Arlington Park residential area, as well as some of the commercial development to the east, including the Walmart area. And if you look the next three slides, what we did early on was focus in on where the crash data really directed us in terms of higher crash incidents. And a lot of those were focused along Washington Boulevard and also to some extent along Highway 60. We did have our first public meeting about 2 weeks ago, and it confirmed a lot of what the crash data was telling us. If you go to slide five, we also have completed a lot of our baseline mapping. Here we looked at where there were higher incidents of pedestrian vehicular conflicts. We've also looked at slope analysis since that's an issue in this area. We've analyzed some of the crash data. We're looking at where there's improvements needed for sidewalks and also looking to hopefully improve some bike access within the neighborhood. If you go to slide six, as I mentioned, we just had our first public meeting. We had a good turnout and some good conversation with the neighborhood there. We broke out into discussion groups, one focusing on vehicular access and one focusing on pedestrian access, with the red dots really highlighting where some of those high conflict points were. We started an online survey, which is live now. We have over 50 responses so far, which is pretty good since the neighborhood is, I think, only 400 people. So we've gotten some good feedback already. We're hoping to keep that up and running throughout the study or throughout the study process. And if you look at the next slide, we're currently doing on-site survey information. We happened to be there during a rainy season, so we got some good information in terms of flooding in the area, as well as looking at signage and overall access and mobility, and looking at potential congestion areas. And then if you look at the last slide, hope this is a fairly quick burn. We're in the throes of the site analysis. We hope to focus in on high priority projects rather quickly and then come up with a report and initial findings and cost opinions late April, early May. With that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, well, thank you, Patty. I'm really glad to see that happen. I travel that neighborhood a lot on Arlington Boulevard, and I know people that there's been deaths at that Arlington Boulevard and Route 60 intersection, people trying to make the last on Route 60 going west on 60, and it's a difficult intersection, plus the flooding. There is a serious city stormwater problem there where the tile has collapsed, and it's really damaged that neighborhood as far as residential homes and things. It's a bad situation, and it does need to be repaired as soon as possible. But so I'm glad to see you're making progress.
I just want to add one small information. We made a request to Chris Kennedy. There is an intersection, Washington Boulevard with the US 60. That intersection, technology intersection, really needs to be improved. And we send the request to the DRS to act quickly. And that really, as a result of the public meeting in Arlington Boulevard, that really, as a result of this public meeting, the public don't want to see something to improve that intersection. It's not functioning correctly. High crash rates, and to you, Chris, you see that?
Yeah, I think I sent it down to Matt Skiles in operations. There.
And hopefully we'll move quickly on that intersection. The problem intersection, that's what really Kyle decided to go ahead to do the problem.
There's a grade school and a high volume daycare that's located in this study area. Have you spoken with them as well?
That the issue with the area around the school was a big part of what came up in the public meeting, and we do tend to reach out to them as well, yes.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Patty. I appreciate your work in the presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the City of Huntington Pavement Management Program. Is that Kimberly? Okay.
Hey, this is Jake Panner with Kinley Horn. Good morning, everybody. So I'll quickly go through the updates for the payment management program for the City of Huntington. And if you go to the second slide, we broke the project into 7 different tasks. We've currently completed tasks 1 through 3 and working on task 4. Task 1 was the kickoff meeting with Kiowa and the City of Huntington. Task 2 is reviewing existing documentation, which we've received both from the City of Huntington as well as West Virginia's DOT. And then task 3 was the on-site pavement and sidewalk assessment that's already been completed both in December and January. Currently, we're going through the data analysis and working on our final reports with task 5 being these meetings. Task 6 is the stakeholder meeting and public forum that will be held in April or May of this year. And then finally, task 7 is the final reports. So moving on to slide number 3, you can see the study area is everywhere located within the city limits of the City of Huntington. So excluding the state-owned and maintained roadways, we were working on all the roadways that were maintained by just the City of Huntington and assessing those roadways and sidewalks on a scale of 0 to 100. Moving on to slide 4, the site assessment overview. You can see this is kind of one of the deliverables that will be a part of the final report. And what we've done is assessed everything on a scale of 0 to 100. So the hard colors, the reds, the oranges, the yellows, those are worst conditions of pavements and sidewalks. And then the softer colors, the blues, the greens, those are in better condition, as you can see. And so moving on to slide number 5. This is just a detailed view. The purple roadways, again, are the state-maintained roads that were not a part of the study. And then we also excluded those parts of Marshall University that are not maintained by the city. Again, you can see the reds, the yellows, those are the areas where we'll be focusing on reconstruction, rehabilitation, and the areas that are blue and green are areas that will be more slated for preventive maintenance and lower priority in the final report. Slide number 6, our final report components. So we'll be including the pavement condition maps, which I've already shown you guys kind of the draft reports of that. Again, showing the existing conditions of the city streets, existing conditions of the city sidewalks, again, on a scale of 0 to 100. And then we'll also be coming up with report and pavement repair recommendations. So we'll export all of that data that was collected in the field during task 3 for the on-site assessment. And we'll be prioritizing the streets and sidewalks based on a few different criteria. So obviously, the existing condition and the value that we're rating these pavements on will be kind of the highest priority, but we'll also be incorporating traffic volume as was received by the West Virginia DOT. And then we'll also be looking at any future infrastructure projects that are included or provided by the City of Huntington or even the state DOT projects that might be adjacent to the areas that we're focusing on. Once we've prioritized everything based on that criteria, we'll be coming up with estimated costs for repairs based on that condition value, and then ultimately giving a short and long-term recommendation for rehabilitation or construction, reconstruction, or preventive maintenance. Moving on to slide 7. Again, so the current project work, we're right in the midst of analyzing all of the data that we collected on site. We're looking at incorporating the traffic data that was been provided by West Virginia DOT, and then we're also currently going through a comparison of the way that we've assessed everything based on our manuals versus how we can incorporate some of West Virginia's DOT's pavement management program and how some of the equations and different assessments that they come up with where they're driving streets and collecting data through vans, how we can compare and contrast the two analyses that we've got there. And then, of course, coming up with repair recommendations. So the upcoming meetings that we have, we've got a stakeholder meeting. It will probably be in either April or May. And on that same date, we'll be holding a public forum and then providing a survey for people to access and put it up on the City of Huntington's website so that the public can access and provide recommendations. The project is slated to be completed by June 30th, but we'll probably have everything wrapped up, hopefully by May. And with that, are there any questions?
Your hearing, Jay, did you want to say anything? Okay. No, I don't think there's any questions or comments. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate your presentation. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the Milton Traffic Mobility Study.
I'm actually in person, so I'm going to come over here and take the clicker.
From you're Carpenter?
Yeah. John Gallagher with Carpenter Marty.
Okay, John.
Milton, it's Milton Mobility Study, I think everybody knows what Milton is. City limits are basically the study area. We may include some routes that are south of town that the locals use as a workaround instead of getting on the congestion 60 are probably a critical component of this. A big part of this study and really the main focus is this Grand Patrician that's planned on the east side of town. Currently, it's not in the city limits, but will be annexed. It's a large development for any city, but for Milton would be considered massive. Authorized proceed in November. Kickoff meeting was held with Milton where we exchanged ideas and they gave us a lot of their concerns. Milton has a lot of different things they'd like to accomplish. Not everything can be done within the study. A lot of historic data was exchanged. There was a pedestrian and bike mobility study that was done with with Barbersville, that was also covered Milton, so we have that. We're doing a lot of the analysis is field observations. We're not collecting any data as part of this. There's a real high-level planning work, so observations are important. We came down for AM observations. It was the day the teachers went on strike, and so we're going to have to redo that. Existing condition analysis in progress, but Jody's provided us the model. Most of the data is coming that we're utilizing is coming from the model. Trip generation and distribution for the Grand Patrician will be a key for what needs to be done in the future. We'll do a planning level horizon year analysis that's in progress. A general safety review in coordination with other studies, just a very high level look. Public involvement will be one of the next things to occur. And a report in the end, we started putting that together just in concept. Of course, you need your own. It's not meant that you see these numbers. It's just giving you a feeling of the 82s that we do have available in the area. This is to the pick 60. This is John Morris. It goes up for the 64 interchange. James River Turnpike is the east-west route south of town that the locals use as sort of a bypass for 60.
Pumpkin Park is there to kind of orient yourself. Glass Factory is here. This is where the ranch traditional feed on the east side of town. We have a rough distribution for how the Grand Patrician traffic will come and go in and out of the facility. Here's a quick look at how much traffic it could potentially produce during a day, and you can see that number is significant. This will be adjusted for what we call internal capture, like the soccer complex. If they're having a tournament, those people are likely to stay at the hotel that's going to be on the facility. So a lot of these trips and 4,000 figures will never leave the facility. We'll make adjustments based on that. And we've done quite a bit of work to contribute some of that traffic and analysis. We'll begin probably our next step of the analysis, PM peak observations, public meeting, and we'll start putting a report together. Any questions?
For that, for the third generation, use the model used by
TV trip rates.
The latest version?
Yeah. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Amendment number 8, the Cuyahoga 2040 Integrated MCP Metropolitan Transportation Plan.
Actually, what it seems that the four requests from the DNDOH, FUDA, TTA, National Health System, Lawrence County Transit, so there are names that. And actually, I think if you look at your package, you see the handout. And the first project, really, the highway project, where we have a digital replacement in IC4, Abbott County. The reason for this is about 340% increase. And also, we have a bridge replacement in US 52 in Wayne County. That's a new project. And in Ohio, we added a new study. US 52 State Route 7 Transit Management. That basically cover US 52 State Route 7. That these are three projects. And also, I want to mention, Tioga has completed the air quality conformity report that addresses the Huntington Ashland 1997 8-hour zone standard maintenance area. That's completed. And for the transit, really, I will defer to that. We have the transit people here. TDA briefly has requested to purchase two new 35-seat buses. That was, you want to add anything to your transit area?
Not much, other than the fact that these vehicles definitely well more than 12 years old and more than 500,000 miles on them. And if we're successful with the grants that they get them built and brought to PTA, it takes about 15 months once the award is done. We're looking at buying some associated capital maintenance out of tires and some other things. And we want to make PTA a safer place to be. And I don't know if that's just me getting older or whatever, but we'd like to see AED devices fit in our facility and at the bus station. So those are included now on the field.
And we believe that transit is the backbone for the transportation system in our area. It's an important mode. Tioga, has decided to support this mode by flipping money through SCBG to replace the old buses. And also, if you look at the bracket, there is also PTA, Action Bus System, North County, Transit, has agreed to fair and the rational sub-regional allocation for FY 2018 through Section 5307, 5340 funds. And if you look here, that's the agreement at the end, I think, time, that's what it shows that a lot of people agree on the distribution. And of course, this process met 15 day public review, began February 7th, 2019, and concluded in February 22nd, 2019. And that really only the action to amend the system and to proceed with the process in order to go through the steps with the federal
utilization and implementation of the quality of something.
All right. Do we hear a motion to amend the TIF as presented?
So moved.
So we have a motion by Jennifer Woodall. Is there a second? Patrick? Okay. Thank you. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Swain,
you want to move right on?
Yes, actually, the work program, that if you look at this document, this is the document, the big paper clip, and actually, that's the work program. As this one, as everybody knows, this document is prepared annually by Iowa Interstate Planning Commission to meet the federal and state requirements. Transportation funding agency. And this was fiscal year 20. As we know, the fiscal year 20 began July 1st, 2019, and June 30th, 2020. And this work program is financed with combined federal money, federal highway administration planning funds, and also money from FDA. And also, we need the match requirement in this program. And the emphasis really more in this work program based on the recommendation from ODOT, Kentucky, Cabinet, and US, and DOD. Basically, the emphasis plan here has been addressed. Also to meet the requirement of the FAST Act. And they have also promised in this work program to support and coordinate each state DOT performance target. Also, other emphasis to be placed in the Title VI, environmental justice activities, development of metro planning agreements, and perform the multimodal plan. If you look at this document, really, it's a thick document. As we mentioned in the agenda, the first draft is due March 1st, 2019, for the Division of U.S. and Kentucky Cabinet and the U.S. and ODOT, and the final draft for the draft is due April 26, 2019. Basically, this is a draft, and please feel free to review. And if you look really at the first page, we provide an abstract that will give you the juice of this product, if that's an abstract. And if you go to the table of contents, it shows the planning work elements based on the guidelines and recommendations of the U.S. And we have also studied, supposed to be approved, this is our program, different studies, the multimodal studies. And these studies also support the performance target for BM1, BM2, BM3. That's also adds a heavy weight on these performance measurements. FY19 was busy, and FY2020 is busier even. This is a good problem to have. To be busy. We need an action by this body.
We will need a motion to move this forward to the policy committee. Is there a motion to do that?
And really, I'd like to thank the U.S., Kentucky Cabinet, ODOT, local communities, counties for support. I mean, without this support, this will not exist. And people, lots of people behind the scenes who work on this document, staff, DOD, Federal Highway Administration, coordination, that's really the result of these big coordination. This is the document.
I need a second. All right, Dr. Davis, thank you. Any further discussion? Questions? Okay, all in favor say aye. Opposed? Okay, we'll move on to the policy committee. Okay, hopefully we have Laura Brown now on the phone for the Coordinated Public Transportation Plan update.
Hello, I am here.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. So thank you for having me. My name is Laura Brown, and I am with RLS & Associates, and I'm here by phone with you today to give you a little update on the Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan that is being updated for the Cuyahoga region. The original plan, as many of you know, was done, well, not original, the last update, a big update, was done in 2015. And then each year since then, Cuyahoga has been handling some updates as new organizations are identified or new partnership opportunities come. But this is the big comprehensive update that is due per FAST Act requirements. And we have been moving through the process. We kicked off in a public survey back in September, but the initial process is a needs assessment. And we started that process in September, and it's still ongoing. The goal of this plan, the purpose of a coordinated transportation plan, is to analyze all of the Federal Transportation Administration funding, as well as other federal funding that's coming into the area to support transportation and movement of people. And the goal is to be able to leverage available funding, federal, state, and local, to maximize how we leverage that for the Cuyahoga area by developing new partnerships and by identifying where improvements could be made in terms of efficiency with human services and public transportation, such as things like sharing trips, long distance trips, for example, filling empty seats, working with Medicaid, working with Department of Health and Human Resources, working with the senior programs, working with the faith-based organizations, and kind of bringing everybody together to identify goals and strategies that these organizations can take at the local level that will help to leverage current funding and make it increase it or make it more sustainable, and also hopefully identify additional funding to address needs and gaps in services. And as I said, our process started with a needs assessment, and we opened up a public survey that's actually statewide, but responses are analyzed by county and by region. So far, we have about 100 responses from the Cuyahoga region. We also had a public meeting back in January. We have two more meetings scheduled, actually three more. We have one public meeting in Ashland coming up on March 7th, and in Lawrence County, Ohio on March 8th. And those will be, of course, open to the public and any transportation stakeholders. And we'll talk about, you know, what are the goals for the future for passenger transportation, getting people around. We'll also have another meeting at the end of March to bring back these goals one more time to the entire area, the stakeholders, to refine it and finalize the planning effort there. We're kind of moving out of the needs assessment phase, even though we have these meetings still going on, and more in the development of goals. Some of the needs that we've identified so far are, you know, making sure that transportation planning is something that happens at the front end of local planning efforts, and so that it's considered, such as when colleges move classes off campus to another location, is it on a transit route? We talked about this. Paul has brought up some good points about even human service agency locations not being on a transit route. So things like that, making sure transportation is at the front end of those discussions, trying to design new ways to do that, using whatever technology opportunities might be out there, or even printed materials and other networking abilities to educate passengers and the public about transportation services that are available, especially outside of the city, so in the more rural areas of the region, and just, you know, addressing that gap in awareness and knowledge. And connecting, you know, statewide as well, making sure there's a venue for transportation needs to be discussed across the state. Some of the challenges, just real quick, that we heard about from the public survey, just to give you an idea, the results we have so far, 21% of people said they don't go to medical appointments sometimes because they don't have a ride. 26% of people don't go to counseling and wellness type appointments because they don't have a ride. 23% said they have challenges getting to work sometimes because they don't have a ride. So we're trying to drill down into those sorts of issues and come up with some coordinated strategies to fill the gaps in that network. We're going to have a draft plan available soon. I don't have an exact date to give you for that, but I know that we'd like to, we're targeting the final adoption of the plan to be at your April meeting. April, I think 23rd and 26th are the TAC and policy meetings for that. So you'll have it well in advance for time to review and comment on that. Are there any questions?
You're off the hook, Laura, and I don't think there are any questions.
All right.
I
went to about the upcoming meeting. You
mentioned
that the one in the 7 must, the 7
conducted, the time is at 10 o'clock, right? The time of the meeting this week from 10 to 12.
Let me double check. I think that's right.
Let me check.
Yeah, let me
make sure. 10 to 12,
yeah.
For both Kentucky and Ohio, and the meeting at the end of March is not decided yet, right?
You
didn't have the
specific
date.
We have 25th.
Yeah, I think.
And
is that
okay?
Here.
Is it okay? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The next item is our public transportation safety plan, and I think Gary's taking us up on that.
This is going to be short and sweet. There's not a whole lot to report on this. We had a meeting last month with the agencies, and we discussed this briefly. This is a requirement, once again, a federal requirement that the public transportation agencies need to come up with a safety plan or an action plan in case something happens. So anyway, fortunately, West Virginia has taken the lead, and TTA is going to follow they graciously are going to work with TTA and West Virginia Transit. Ohio is going to do the same thing with Lawrence County Transit. Unfortunately, Kentucky, Ashland, I think you're at the point of trying to evaluate what is needed to complete the plan.
We're gonna go with the state.
You're going to go with the state too? Okay, so just easy process for us. We don't have to do anything. Each of the agencies have some guidance, and hopefully, like I said, it's, the compliance date is July 20 of 2020, so they've got a little over a year to complete all the things. I'm sure we'll hear some reports back at some point in time. So that's short and sweet.
In Ohio, there's a meeting May 7th. That will be basically to initiate the MBO, Transit Agency Communication Coordination. That would be, I think Mike, I met with Jessica Hayes last Friday, Moda, the transit office. She said she's in the invitation too. And Kiowa, of course, will have somebody for the event. That will be central office, May 7th.
Anything else on the safety plan? Okay.
All right, transit systems update for the Huntington, West Virginia, Kentucky, urban island area, referred to as the DMS. Okay, I think I'm going to go out of order on this, and I'm going to ask Ashland to go first. TTA almost always goes first.
We're going to do that. not a whole lot has changed since the last meeting. We did get our approval letter to go ahead and purchase 2 24x2 cutaways from the state bid. So we're moving forward with that. I was going to say we are going with the state plan for the safety action plan, mainly with us being state government. It just made sense all along with what the state was going to do. But other than that, looking forward to spring.
Start praying for sunshine. Yeah. Okay, Mike. Nothing major to report except we are receiving in the three demand response vehicles today. So they're replacement vehicles. So judging to see that we finally got them.
Great. Well, on behalf of TPA, the white pressure program, that was just
talking about for things like eternity is now coming to life. They just about have all the bike racks installed near the bus system, near the bus stops and shelters. We have two bike lockers that will be at Holman Square, and there are 10 repair and pump stations that will go around our community. So we're really excited about that, and that project should finish up within the next 2 weeks. So we're real proud and excited about that. We finished up another project, and I know we were talking about it, and there was grand dollars involved. Rehabbing the 1953 restrooms at our transfer facility at PTA Center in the old Greyhound building. They are done. They're very nice. And I know we didn't have a ribbon-cutting ceremony. But anyway, they are very nice. And if you do get the opportunity to stop by PTA Center, take a tour of the whole building and use the bathroom. Just so be it. Use the restroom. And I do like to report to you that we are, once again, we're growing in ridership, and we're really excited about that. We're running about a 2% increase this year so far. PTA will be on path to have about 920,000 boardings this year. And a lot of that is in part due to, we lost the high service. We don't count those numbers anymore, but we that new access agreement with Marshall University is providing Marshall students are now used to buses more than they ever have. And so we're really pleased about that. Anything else you have heard?
Is there a marketing plan associated with the bike racks and lockers and pump stations? Is there a marketing plan?
There will be once we get it all up. There are signs and stuff now going up at the bus shelters. But yeah, we'll have a press release. We'll get it out there. Everybody knows it's there. So we just heard about the Marshall University bike plan study. We're really not in that. We should be part of that.
But we are part of Amy White.
But we haven't been one.
I think we're next time.
Yeah, okay. But that's it for the transit systems. I believe Mike. FTA, 5310 Transit Program. Perry.
Sorry, I'm doing, we're short staffed. I'm multitasking today. We're short staffed people, so I'm kind of trying to do several different things. So, so the 5310 Transit Program for our area, the round four applications, they were delayed because of the federal shutdown. I do believe that this, I haven't had a chance to talk with Paul or Jennifer, but I believe they have been submitted. They were submitted. And so we're just waiting for the approval from FTA. So that sometimes that takes a while. So that was round four. We're working on round five. We do not have a date yet. We do need to meet with TTA to try to determine a good date. On that as well, I guess I don't think it's on here. We're working to kind to streamline the 5310 program where the application's not as trying, and this is about that thick now. So we're working to try to streamline that so that when people receive the application, they're not thinking, oh my gosh, what the heck am I going to do with this, and then put it aside and not have an applicant. So we're working with RLS, Laura Brown, and her team, and she is going to be reviewing that and providing some data for us. We're also going to be bringing on a part-time person who is very knowledgeable about the 5310 program, Tony Boyd, who has retired from the West Virginia Department of Transportation. And so she will be assisting in some of that with the 5310 program as well. So over the next couple months, look for some changes and some things to come with that program. Now, one of the things, too, I'm going to go down is the 5310 purchase of the contracted services and applications. Originally, we only had vehicle purchases. So we were not expending all of our funds. So we, Cuyahoga, TTA, as a group, kind of
made a decision that we could have contracted services for this. That's where an agency that can provide the services, they're paid in a different way than they would if they just received a 5310 deal. They're paid for the services provided. They may have a vehicle, so they'll try to pay them like by trip, and they have to document all that information. So we have had that pilot program with one agency here in Huntington, and it has gone very well from my understanding. And so we're looking to expand that for other areas within the tri-state area.
Diesel, right?
CISO, whatever, Community Health County Services Organization. Yeah. So, like I said, they were a pilot program, and we're really fortunate that they stepped up and to take that role to be take that action for us. So, like I said, we're going to open it up to other areas. One area we had kind of talked with Greenup County fiscal court to kind of take some of that role, and so we're going to kind of I'm going to be meeting with them a lot to try to make sure that we get that within the next year, year and a half with them as well. The next thing, what I get is the Title VI program or Title VI document. We have updated that in December of 2018. That is on our website. If you have any questions about our Title VI plan, the participation plan, we're in progress with that. To be honest with you, we had so many things go on that I did put on kind of on the back burner, but now that a lot of these other projects are complete and you know, the work program is out of the way, I'll be, I'm probably about, 60% finished with doing that. So it's going to be moving ahead, and hopefully before the summer, it will be completed as well. So if you have any questions about 5310, Paul or Jennifer, any?
And this is the other thing about that for the needed for contracted services, the match is 20. That's incentive. But that's still an operation, particularly 20. Yeah. All right. All right, so now we're down to the transportation performance management coordination update.
Do you want to say something? The handout is on 11/17 after the work program. The very front page is the summary of all the performance measures, PM1, 2, and 3. And we have to keep track of a summary of all the states around us with the USGM Association up to date. Everyone can share and use this. Originally designed by Bernadette at Highways in Kentucky. So you can use it to up with everything. States are all safety measures are all up to date for each state and approved. And then on the back, you have the transit plan and the transit management plan, the transit, the dates, and everything there. Keep this up to date, and if anybody would like a copy, electronic PDFs or anything else. It's a good summary sheet to have.
Just I'm going to add a few things here for the performance management. Like as everybody knows, it's effective May 20th, 2019, transportation plan is requirement. That's what created the transportation plan, different performance level. Then we meet that requirement, that's it, okay, over. And of course, below the 2020, there's also be an annual MBO safety target that we will show more. The state target. July 2020, that's the public transportation agency safety plan in the process. And October 2020, we have the state midterm performance report, target free assistance. That's what we have. And this one, I'm kind of joining him in this document. The reason we have Maryland because of the application.
Okay, now we're down to winding up here. It looks like federal studies, free project updates, and informational session. Federal update, Chandra.
So I'll just repeat what Celine said, that the next kind of due date that I'm concerned about
is May 20th, 2019, which is when all this PM2, PM3 information needs to be phased into the TIPS, the SIPs, and the long-range plans in the state. And I'm going to send out a reminder email, hopefully later today, that just kind of summarizes what we're expecting to see based on the federal requirements should be in those reports. That's really the only thing we have going on right now. I feel like it's awfully quiet on our side, but that way for long. So take it while you got it.
Thank you.
This is Laura Amiro. I just wanted to add on to what Chandra said. I'm not familiar with the West Virginia or the Kentucky TPM agreements that the MPO signed with the state departments of transportation, but the Ohio one also contains information on what has to be included in the TIP and the long-range plan that Chandra was just mentioning. So that's also another resource to look at to ensure that you have all the appropriate information.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else on the federal side? Okay. Brett Brown, Tri-State Airport. Mason Tri-State Airport. Okay. City of Huntington, Jay.
Yeah, so for us, we got the Hal Greer Boulevard Corridor Management Plan that Stantec was hired by the state to work on. We just had our public meeting in January and got some comments from them during that meeting, some feedback on the concept that was proposed. Stantec just got their turn counts in the last month from the state of West Virginia, so that's going to impact their conceptual design so far, specifically where the medians are placed to limit left turns and some of the intersection changes that were proposed. So we'll see what that concept looks like coming the next community meeting, which will be March 21st at the A.D. Lewis Center from 6 to 7:30. So with that, we'll see the final concept. That we're moving forward towards schematic documents for that project. With that, in the current concept design, Stantec did confirm we'll be able to fit in bike lanes, but not on the roadway between Washington Boulevard and 8th Avenue. Those will actually be up where the sidewalk is instead, but not actually with the traffic lanes. Additionally, we will be able to do the bike lanes elsewhere towards the Marshall campus. Some of the other concepts and ideas that were thrown out. So all those are moving forward, and we feel good about that, especially with the path plan that we have and the connectivity plan that we're working on. Additionally, the city's also moving forward to hopefully secure funding for lighting Hal Greer Boulevard. Since we have confirmed with Stantec, we will not be moving curb and gutter on Hal Greer Boulevard. And that was the number one priority from our community there. So we're moving forward with that ahead of schedule.
Share for the meeting on the 21st. There is a meeting for the stakeholders around the room, right? Or just only meeting in the evening?
Yes, there's a steering committee meeting for the Howard Boulevard steering committee in the afternoon. And I am going to reach back out to all of those folks and reconfirm that time because I've had several future people reach out and recommend maybe a little earlier in the day. Originally it was proposed from 3:30 to 4:30, but an earlier time seems like it would work better for everybody so far. So I'll get that confirmed, and but it will be that afternoon.
So I wanted to add on our Chicago website, we have a survey on Hunter Boulevard. We also have one for you go to our main website, the lower main website. Comments.
Yeah. Place comments. Yeah. Basically, to add any kind of issues that you have, and so that we can take it off. Shay, I know we're, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse, but I know we're looking at Arlington Park and Boulevard and all that stuff in that study, but is there any discussion with the city about how we're more aware of that water, standing water, sewer line? Right. It is just, it runs on the middle of the road, basically. I just didn't
know if there was any discussion over waivers or
not. That I'm not sure about, to be honest. I've not gotten with Public Works or the Sanitary Board on that issue yet. Been focusing most of my time since starting with the city on Fairfield and West Side.
I just didn't know if you had heard any discussion on what kind of pitch on the spot or anything. So there was any discussion to repair that. It's those houses that are along that area have just, they can't sell and they can't do anything with that property. It's become kind of, even though it's not my neighborhood, it's kind of like it's bugging me. Definitely can't see, you know, probably ought to start asking more about it. I'll call them Brian Brady and talk to him.
Yeah, I'll make sure to follow up with both Sanitary Board and Public Works on that, so I can get in the loop on it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Okay, what's the DOT?
Yep, thanks. As some of you are probably already aware, we are in the process of developing our new SIP, Virginia. As part of that process, we are required to do some public outreach. And a large portion of that's going to be covered by our state highway engineer, Aaron Gillespie. He's going to do a video. We're going to upload it to social media on our website. But as more locally here in Huntington, we have scheduled a public meeting for April the 4th from 4 to 7. And we've reached out to Cuyahoga staff, and they're going to help us secure a facility and work out all the details on that. But that's on April the 4th from 4 to 7. Project updates. We have a Cologne interchange. We actually kind of ran into a few snags. We have some environmental justice issues with the trailer park there along Benedict Road. So we're not sure how much of a schedule impact all that's going to have. We're also in the process of negotiating with the railroad, trying to figure out that tie into US 60. And then, we had that public meeting on January the 17th, which we had a great turnout for that. I don't know how many of you all were able to attend, but it was, we got some good feedback from that. So as far as Culloden goes, it may be dependent on those railroad issues and environmental justice. I guess we might have to shift our schedule around a little bit, but we're still hopeful. It's still moving forward. Next, we have our I-64 widening from 4 to 6 lanes for 3.5 miles. That's from 29th Street up to the Guyandotte Bridges. Originally, the Guyandotte Bridges, they were included in that widening project, but because of the scope and how, I mean, you all know the Guyandotte Bridges, they're huge. So they're actually pulling those bridges out of that project and doing those separately. So that is still, I guess, the roadway portion is still moving forward. Making good progress on that. The next section of 64 is between Merritts Creek and the Huntington Mall Bridges. That widening project will make it go from 4 lanes to 8 lanes. It's a design build project. They have the request for proposal was advertised on January 7th, and it's scheduled to be let May 14th. So that one is actually moving here pretty soon. Wayne County, US 52, from the airport to Pritchard, they actually found Native American artifacts or whatever you want to call it. So we're not really too sure what kind of impact that's going to have on us moving forward just yet. They're still ironing out all those. That's pretty much all. Oh, yeah. I'll go ahead and cover Jody's. He's talking about 2019 build, which I'm not sure what that is. It's infra. Sorry. It's the infra grants. We have been trying to get some guidance on what we're going to select and submit for that discretionary grant for the infra. It's focused on freight. We've had 4 meetings with Secretary Smith. And right now, the governor's office has kind of got a chokehold on our decision-making abilities in our upper tier of our agency. So we have really no idea what we're submitting, and the due date is a week from yesterday. So I did. I was able to get them to say, yes, it's okay that Kiowa can submit Culloden, and we will support that. We'll give you all a support letter, but we, as a highway department, are still unsure about what the governor wants us to do as far as R3 that we may or may not be submitting at this point.
One consideration is the length, the Huntington Tri-State Airport, Pritchard.
Airport to Pritchard, okay.
Because we've talked a lot about the need to break between those two items.
Okay, we had a meeting last week with Engineering Division because the conditions set on our applications are they have to basically be construction ready for the most part, and they got to go to construction fairly quickly after they get awarded. Yeah. So we had a meeting with Engineering Division just to kind of figure out what projects we could do, and we narrowed it down to 6 projects in total, 2 from each congressional district. And the 2 that was in this congressional district, we had for these 2 64 widening jobs. So if we would only select one of those if we got the green light to do that, but that's kind of where we stand. Everything's kind of up in the air right now as far as infra goes for us.
Well, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Any other questions for Chris? Okay, we'll jump across the river to Kentucky, Collins.
Okay, just wanted to mention that we've started working on our 2020 safety targets, and the Division of Traffic Operations is taking the lead on that. But so they don't really have anything definitive at this point, but I'm hopeful that once they do come up with some ideas of what they think those should look like, that they'll let us distribute that to the MPOs. But also, if anybody does have any comments that they'd like to provide relative to that, you can go through me or through our HSIP staff in the Division of Traffic Operations. Let's see, our Division of Maintenance has recently completed the Transportation Asset Management Plan for the state, and I'd say it's sort of complete. It's looking at the needs that we'll have for maintaining state of good repair for our bridges and pavements. And one thing that's not included in the current version is identification of high-risk locations and areas that are subject to repeated repairs, but that's supposed to be included in the final version. And I don't know if the current draft is available for the public, but I have shared that with the MPO staff in case that's useful for some of the planning work that you're doing at the local level. But I think it will be more useful when it's completed with those specific locations identified. And the last thing I wanted to mention was we're starting to work on our new 6-year highway plan using the SHIFT process again. That's the second time that we've used that process. Over the past year, we've been making refinements to the calculation methods that we use for scoring projects. And, for example, one of the big changes we've made, we've started looking at actual travel time data to identify congested locations and estimate travel time savings. So I think we'll get a more accurate representation of what the project scores should be in that regard. Of course, we've also made some refinements to the safety calculations. Overall, I think it'll be a better process this time around. But at this point, we're just looking at the MPOs and the area development districts to choose projects for sponsorship. And those are due March the 15th, I believe. And I know this MPO has already had discussions with the Boyd and Greenup County officials, so we're on track there. And we'll be evaluating those projects and seeking more input over the coming year, and hope to have a new draft 6-year highway plan put together by the end of this year. And that's pretty much all I had.
Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate it. The next thing is Boyd and Greenup County's project update.
Hey, Terry was nice enough to include a copy of our project list in your packet. I'll start with Boyd County. I won't go over every project, but it highlights. 9-8400, that's US 60 reconstruction from Colton to Cannonsburg. And that's the project that we've been working on, and everybody's going to be happier to see that one start moving dirt and that. But we are still scheduled for an August paving. The fourth one down is 9-404. That's a planning study and environmental assessment of the Rush Off-Road recreational area in Boyd County. But we do have a lot of traffic congestion there, especially around the events that the Rush Off-Road facility has. So we are doing a planning study to see what we can do to mitigate that congestion, and that's being managed by AECOM. And right now they're doing some surveying work, conference work of that type. Get started with that. And the ninth project down, 9-20002, that's I-64 resurfacing for about a 3-mile stretch beginning at the Boyd Carter line, coming eastward to just about a mile and a half west of the Kentucky 180 interchange there. That has been led, and work should be completed by the end of July. So beware of traffic delays there. So if you don't mind, just flip the page over, and we'll go to Greenham County. The first project on the list is 9-1073. That's a bridge replacement on Kentucky 244, the Russell Viaduct Bridge. That's at our side of the Ironton Russell Cable State Bridge. We're scheduled for a letting sometime this spring. We have had some right-of-way issues there, so that's delayed it a little bit, but that's a pretty major project in that area. And on down the project list, you see our last highway plan was really funded a lot of bridge rehabs and replacements. And so there's 5 different bridges in Greenham County that will be let real soon. So a lot going on there. And also one project that didn't show up, it's a Carter County project because that's where it starts, but it actually goes into Greenham and Boyd, is I-64 or the industrial parkway from I-64 to the industrial park where Brady Industries are looking to locate, and we're looking to widen that from 2 lanes to 4 lanes. So we do have a consultant on board there, and they're working with Brady on site planning and the surveying work out there to get that project.
All right,
thank you.
Okay. Now we're over in Ohio. Patrick, what you got?
We have PID 99201. That's the county road 15 and 18. That's a resurfacing project that incorporates about a little over 10 miles worth of paving. That's about a $1.3 million project. So that is out for bid right now. It started advertising last Wednesday. Open up here in a couple weeks. We also have 109-322. That's County Road 2 at the 0.97-mile mark. That is a landslide repair. It's out for design. The stage 3 plans are just about done, so I can submit that to ODOT and get the federal authorization for that project. As soon as I get the design back from that one, then I'll have 109-323, which is a landslide that's roughly 2.5 miles up the road from there. And we can't shut that road down 2 places at one time, so we do construction. So I have kind of phased through with design, give us a little bit of lag there. So that will be in the control of that project, 1 mile mark project. We also have the County Road 10A at the 0.91-mile mark. That is a design-build bridge project that's out for bid right now. It advertised last Wednesday. It's about a $1.5 million project. So we're looking about 6 weeks for the advertisement on that one. We have County Road 104 at the 2.4-mile mark. That is another design-build bridge. That is up for fiscal year 23. So I'm trying to get that one pushed forward because it's horrible. Sketchy one now. That's roughly about $1.1 million project on that one. Also, we also have the US 52 State Route 243 project. That's an interchange project. that's one I've been bringing. That was, we were in the feasibility study, planning phase, what to do, whether it was signalization, roundabouts on either side. The feasibility study came back, roundabouts on either side. We have plans that are capable of doing the design build project on, putting them together. So I have bid packages to have that format already done with the solve the road project. Now we're just in the finding funding process. As soon as I find funding, we may have a couple open up there.
Okay, great. On that, is COVID in a position to do a letter of support and so on so that we could go after ARC funding? It's our belief that we could do a $500,000 ARC that could come available this summer, but we will need.
Yes, that's in the
letter.
Language, and we can just okay. Make sure we're moving the right. Use the right language.
And everybody loves your South Point roundabout.
That was my last project. 97484, that was the US 52 Salt Road project that opened up on January 4th. One of the last things we did was striping, and it was the wrong time of year, so as soon as it warmed up, we'll go through and do the cleanup. There's a few little odds and ends that they need to complete on that. Now, on the second day that it opened, we had people from Chapmanville come up to drive through. All they want to do is drive through roundabout. So there is a roundabout in our region now, and it was. I've heard from the community, and got back to somebody within the department that they were talking about at the Cole Grove exit that. No, they really ought to put in a roundabout, but they need two on either side. He said, well, we're doing on the budget right now. So it's become a good little process and pretty efficient.
Congratulations.
Okay, great. Okay, anything else, Matt?
Nope.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I think we're down to the sub-allocation funds.
We have a resurfacing project on 52 coming up. It starts just south of South Point and goes to 527 Bridge. The 52 rock remediation and resurfacing project in the Ashland Bridge area should be awarded at the beginning of June. And we have a sign maintenance project.
Just one thing, as you are aware, we have the green key that is supposed to be built hopefully this summer. We need to make sure that the resurfacing job will not come.
Yeah, Patricia's aware of that and discussing it with some other people.
And since that process, I didn't check the edits, but since that the green key is on schedule, right?
As far as I know.
And that's also they provide 100%.
One thing, there is a later Rob will come in, and we did self-introduction. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Mark Bryan. I'm with Agile, and I've been stalking the committees in this area, trying to get together with the folks that matter and with the local folks so that I can better understand you guys' needs.
Okay, well, everyone's welcome. Thank you. I just want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself.
Appreciate it.
Okay, now we're down to sub-allocation fund. Terry?
Okay. You want to?
No.
Okay. All right. We've had our round of sub-allocated funds for projects. We've actually extended the deadline to February the 28th, which will be Thursday. So those who have actually submitted their intent to apply can go ahead and please, if you have not, go ahead and submit in your final application. Actually, we had a pretty good group of apps so far coming through. We've in Kentucky, we've actually had City of Ashland actually turned in several. The Highway District Office, KYTD did, TTA, City of Huntington, South Point. So, I mean, we've had a good variety of different types of projects. They're not all sidewalks. They're not all, you know, so we've got, I mean, it's really pleased. So keep it up. And I don't have the dollar amount for everybody else. I just looked on my phone. Kentucky project totals, if everyone submits their project as they intended, we have about $1.8 million worth of projects that could be coming our way. So as long as they all meet eligibility, then that's a good amount. And we want to keep that up because Kentucky has about $1.4 million a year to expend. So as you see, for the Kentucky applicants, things are going to start getting tighter. So you need to really start making your application very, very good because they will end up becoming more competitive for the funding. I think that's way with some of the other states too. So like I said, we're really pleased with what we have. So once we get all those, these projects have to meet the policy board's approval, and each of the states has a different process. So whatever process that is for each of those states, we will follow it, make sure those projects are hopefully started soon. And if you have any questions about the project, just let me know. I mean, like I said, I have a listing of them, but since it's not the deadline yet, I didn't want to release them.
Yeah. So this is round six, right? What federal fiscal year is federal?
Well, okay, so every year we haven't used all the federal funds, so I can't tell you, you know, every state has different funding allocations, and so everyone's on a different cycle. But were you calling it a federal fiscal year application cycle of like 18-19? So I would say everybody's dollars kind of staggers and has different money. So
actually, the only thing would be to know for sure what they're going for the step.
Yeah.
The step, that the federal authorization will come. That means. But this, we are holding physical 19 on.
That's kind of where we're looking at. And any of the funds that we haven't used, we have to make up. So if, some of these states, we can, well, not, Ohio's not in the case. West Virginia might be. I have to go back and look at the tabulation. But we need to use the funds within 3 years of the actual when we're allocated the funds. If not, they will go into lapse. So to say 19, we can still use 2016 funds and go back and accumulate that. So.
Very good, thank you. We're down to other business and lunch. Okay. Who's taking those?
Actually, I'm authorized to speak on behalf of Ohio, but I think it's all the menu. Ohio gets that increase in distance, in immediate. That's what they're talking about. But Dr. Hengesty is more aware of what needs than this, but basically 18 cents, an immediate increase, and that 18 cents will generate $1.2 billion, and the problem is 60% of that money goes to local, and the four is come to local government. And it seems to me it's moving, and Dr. Hengesty maybe is more in touch with these things than me.
Spreadsheet that I got from ODOT, you know, with our funds, our county is $2.4 million in gas tax. That broke up all the gas tax and all the whole state goes to Columbus. It all goes in one big pot and they divide it out from there. So it doesn't matter whether you buy your gas in Lawrence County or up in Columbus, we still get our share of it. So all the counties get the same amount. So we get 2.4, and they're estimating 2.4 million is what we get. That's our money that we get out of it. And they're estimating 4.2 after it's got increased. So we're looking at a budget going from $4.2 million, what our actual budget is now, to roughly $6 million. And that's quite a increase. A lot of money being able to be used to get roads back up to the standard.
I think like for me is this personally, because this is a national event, most of the states are starting increasing the gas tax, and hopefully this will put pressure on the federal government to increase the federal gas tax. That's what we need to see. Federal gas tax has to go up. That's important. Otherwise, the federal role will be weakened in the sector.
All your congresspeople and senators.
we were lower on the state side than everybody else around us. I mean, we were 28 cents. Kentucky was 36. So we're higher than them with this, but we were lower than Kentucky even. So that's what they looked at. You know, they looked at Michigan being 50 some cents.
Conference.
the MPOs, we have 7-8 presentations total.
No for adjournment?
So moved.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thanks.